Welcome to another episode of Fed Ninjas. And in speaking with Eric Adams today, Eric says this is a pretty pertinent subject we're going to be talking about. In particular, it's going to be disaster recovery and business continuity. There's a few little personal stories we'll be talking about. And then Eric's going to dive in on some of the factors that are critical to success, recovery as well as continuity.
And this is probably one of the most important topics that we've talked about so far because it's applicable in all areas of IT systems, not just federal cloud. It is required there, but it's also pertinent to on-premise systems and other cloud systems of being able to basically, in the event of a disaster, have people ready and prepared to run a system on the business continuity side, but also disaster recovery for the systems and being able to prepare for any type of disaster and how to respond to that to keep your systems going. So super informational on, you know, what is important, why it's important, and we might highlight a little bit of how to go about some strategies as well. But first, I want to hear about your story. Pretty amazing. And I've heard this from you before, and I want to hear it again. And it's about Maurice was at ground zero on 9/11. Yeah. And when I first heard this story from you, I was just like, whoa, no way. I've never met anyone in person that has been at ground zero when the events happened on that morning in New York City and Manhattan at the World Trade Center. And so I want to hear your experience, because the experience to the data centers and to data recovery have to do with that. So I want to hear it, Maurice.
You got it. Well, here we go. Yeah, as Eric mentioned, I am a 9/11 survivor, and it was an interesting day because it was such a beautiful day, as all of you might recall, crystal clear blue skies, the whole bit. And I was working on 160 Water Street over at AIG at the time, and I was on the east side of the building on the 24th floor when I heard an explosion. There, I didn't think anything of it. I thought it was construction. I just said something under my breath, like, oh, those daggone construction guys. Then our executive assistant called me and said, hey, a plane ran into the towers. I thought, what? And so I went onto the west side of the building, and sure enough, you could see it hit spot on, and I immediately understood it was not an accident. And went and bought a disposable camera, came back on the 24th floor, elevators opened up, and it was mass chaos. Pandemonium is a better word, because people were trying to get in the elevator, get the heck out of there, because while I was in the elevator shaft, the second plane had hit. So I went over to the window, started taking pictures until we got kicked out. And my subway station was on the was at ground zero. You know, it's on Broadway and John Street, for those that you might know that. And I didn't think anything of it. I just sat there and took pictures, talking to tourists that were in shock and other people that were commuting in and out. And as I took a final picture of the explosion happened, and I remember it very distinctly. And I remember thinking, I'm done. So anyway, with that being said, I was trapped in a building for next 20 minutes or so, until the emergency responders that I was trapped with said, we got to get out of here, which we did. As about 5 minutes after we had left, the second tower had collapsed, and made my walk home up to the Upper East Side where I was living at the time. So what happened after that, though, is that there was this, that back then, everyone didn't have a cell phone, right? I was fortunate I had one. Even then, it was useless because I couldn't get through to anybody on any of the systems. And then once we got home, I got called by someone. I go, how'd you get the number? And instead of automation or internet or anything else, it was a calling tree. So they had an emergency calling tree, and it was a manual calling tree. It's a little archaic for these times and such, but I thought it was really cool that they got a hold of us, checking on our well-being. But then fast forward, as the work week continued the following week, actually, maybe it was a little bit longer than that, I didn't go back in the office for a couple of weeks. And I was reliant on one of those secure ID little changing things all the time there. And my computer, at the same time, we didn't have access to everything. It was something that they were very diligent in trying to fix, but there were certain elements that I did not get into. And so that's the crux of a personal disaster. Even though it wasn't massively important in my life at that very time, it also was something that came into great consideration post 9/11. What do we do in order to make sure everything's secure? And not only is everything secure, but what do we do to be able to access the critical things that we need in order to make sure that we have something to come back to after the disaster? Anyway, that's pretty much the gist of it in relation to what we're talking about today. Why don't we jump into your thoughts on not only that experience, but what are the implications that has for us today?
Yeah, thanks, Maurice. I wanted to hear that story again. I know there's even more details to it. It was pretty amazing when I first heard that from you. And so thank you for that. And again, thank all the first responders to that disaster and any other type of disaster. Because when you're planning for IT systems, you plan for different scenarios in your risk register. And when you're prepared for any type of disaster that you can think of, or pandemic, or anything that might occur, construction accidents at a data center, or the lines that come in to provide internet or other communications in and out of a data center that go down. And so there's all these different scenarios to look at. I guess what I've seen, and I'll put this into a context of what we had talked about on some previous episodes, and that was requirements for federal cloud authorization using the FedRAMP process, because this opened my eyes to something called IT contingency planning, in which there are templates and subsequent NIST references. NIST 834 is a great reference for this, and there's very good details on contingency planning. And that has two major parts to it. What you mentioned before was the people. And so that's business continuity, ensuring there are personnel with primary roles, secondary roles as backups, and then even further down, and typically in different locations in case there is some sort of a regional disaster, but also that those people have the knowledge to operate systems and the access to operate systems also. And so that's where business continuity is very important for. That is the people part of it. The systems part of it is disaster recovery. And so a lot of IT personnel, security personnel, risk personnel have heard of this, where you're operating your cloud service or on-premise service at a particular data center, and that's your primary data center of operations. And if there is a disruption, you might have what's called maybe a warm site, a hot site, a cold site, depending on the level of preparedness and, of course, expense, where maybe those systems are ready to go right away. Everything's operational. That might be a hot site or cold site. You have to replicate data to it. But that is your primary processing site. And so within that cloud authorization process, the cloud service provider had to prove by running exercises, functional exercises, that if there was a disaster, you could bring the system online to the alternate data center. So what that entailed was, if you've got all of your data that's running an operation at your primary data center, it's backed up offsite at an offsite location with continuous replication.
Right.
Then in the event of that disaster, you're able to start operating from that offsite backup onto your secondary data center, and you're able to rebuild if those systems aren't already in operation, depending on your service model, and you're able to test that and within a couple of parameters show that you can do this to the level of contracts that are expected by your customers. What those are typically called is to how far back you were in transactions when you were running the system and then it stopped. So let's say I was doing a transaction, maybe I lost maybe 10 minutes of data or something. That would be acceptable if it comes back on the other site. Then there's also, how long does it take to bring the system back up? Does it take 4 hours? Does it take 6 hours? Does it take 10 hours? Well, those are called recovery point objective, the first one we talked about, and then recovery time objective of how long it takes to come back. And so really, those are some concepts of what is required in those cloud authorizations for being able to have systems come back on the disaster recovery side, and then having people available on the business continuity side. And so that umbrella of IT contingency covers over both of them. And when you do tests, you could do a functional test to where you actually run off of the secondary site and you show how long all of those steps in between take in order to test it to make sure it's running correctly. You basically do everything but switch over your domain name. So you do everything but change DNS. Maybe you're running at a just the IP address level of the secondary site. You make sure it all works correctly. So that type of run through is a functional exercise. There's also tabletop exercises to where you say, okay, we're going to do a tabletop test. All the teams are going to join a bridge, and we're going to say, here's a mock disaster, and here's, let's say there was a construction accident. The primary data center was down. We can't recover. The application owner declares a disaster and ready, set, go. What procedures do we do? And then you just follow the procedure playbook until you're able to show you can bring it back at the secondary site. But what's really awesome about that is you have lessons learned. You say, oh, wow, I didn't know. We didn't log into the secondary site for a while. Now our logins didn't work. So you realize all these things and you put it into the playbook, into the procedures, and you retrain personnel.
I got a question real quick on that. On the playbook, an event like 9/11, I'm sure they had to look at so many things for any playbook, right? How do you make those adjustments to meet the needs quicker? And then another question in front, further is, how then do you use it to forecast potential events?
Yeah, well, at 9/11, there were a lot of definitely lessons learned, and there were some heroic efforts. Of course, again, hats off to all of the personnel, the people involved. That was devastating. Then also, after all of that, the systems, how did they recover? Well, it was a heroic effort by multiple large companies and small companies in partnership to be able to recover whatever data they could, because it was such a catastrophe. And I don't think really people thought that basically the buildings would be gone, which was horrific. A lot of those lessons learned and being able to cluster systems, being able to have different offsite backups, there were lessons learned from that. So it was quite an impact, of course, to human loss, to harm to individuals, but also to systems and devastation of systems. And so that really fits in FedRAMP terms, kind of a high baseline system. That's why you have these procedures in place.
Gracious, that's so much to take in to process.
Yes. Well, and that's why there are these procedures for these high impact, moderate impact, even low impact to a degree, in order to have proper backup and then recover procedures, but really to have them in detail for these very important systems, cloud systems, financial systems. We actually used the same concept before the global pandemic that happened in 2020, prepared using these same systems in a fintech environment, interviewing over 70 people in critical roles. And that's not just the ones keeping the applications running or the systems running. That's also for important things like accounts and collections in order to run the business. And so it's all of these critical functions of a business to ensure that it can still run in case of some sort of disaster.
It's fascinating to understand what goes into making sure that we have access to data, but also making sure that we can continue in the things
Absolutely.
we're doing. It's easy to assume that it's all going to be there until it's not. And I say that just from experience, right? And on a couple occasions, actually. So, what would you recommend that CISL practitioners or anyone in similar roles should be aware of? I know you outlined some things, and if that's just a redundant question, pay no attention.
No, I have some good advice. I have good advice of what CISOs and other security people should be aware of. And that is evaluate where you're at, evaluate the risk, understand the importance of your data, work with others, legal officers, stakeholders, and understand how valuable the data is you're trying to protect, the systems you're trying to protect, and make sure that you have proper system redundancy in place. And so you can get better over time by documenting what you have, going through the plans and procedures, running these type of tests with your teams, and then going back and saying, okay, is this good enough? on a risk-based business perspective. Let's present this to some other members of our executive team, show them what we've done, and make sure that it's adequate and it protects the systems.
Man, that's sound advice. Sound advice. Well, it's one of those topics that definitely is worth coming back to because there are other pieces of it. And especially in light of all the different attacks that are happening today, I still go back to the original article that made me want to join up with this Fed Ninjas, and that is 45 billion attacks a day. And so if we aren't vigilant on making sure that we continually have access, that we ensure the continuity, boy, some of the results could be catastrophic.
Sure thing. Like, look at if your primary data center is getting pegged by denial of service attacks and you lose your availability. And if you are able to move your systems over to a secondary data center where you're not getting hit, then you're able to be up and available. And these critical systems, when they're down, even for a little while, it can be devastating. There can be millions or tens of millions or more of financial data lost per minute or per second or whatever it might be. And then, of course, if you're looking at warfighter type systems, of course, that could lead to even worse type of damages.
Man, I didn't even think about that. I mean, you're way ahead of the ball game on that. It's a little scary. And I should have thought about that because I'd work at a defense system place at one time. So, well, to the audience, I would hope that if there are any questions, or even if you'd like to be on a guest on the show to discuss this topic, be sure you reach out to us. We'd love to hear about it from all points of view. If there are any questions, make sure that you send us something at info@fedninjas.com. Anything else that you'd like to add there, Eric?
No, but just thank you for your story. That incredible amount of sharing of that day. This is just a topic that really means a lot to me. I think it's super important.